south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. A lot of people are thinking about a plan B in South America. In fact, here's an email from one of my Expat Insider seminar attendees asking this. He says, "Hey, Johnny, I have a friend who's interested in moving to South America. He mentioned that he heard something about Uruguay giving almost instant citizenship to gringos who can prove they have around $500 or more in monthly income rolling in. Sounds a little too good to be true for me, but I thought I'd run it by you. I think I remember you had some issues with the economy and or government of Uruguay and don't recall you saying anything about fast citizenship status. However, things are always changing. Anyway, thanks again for all the help in keeping the Frederick Douglass Underground Latin Railroad open for slaves of all colors. Signed, D." Well, D, I'm glad your friend asked that question about the fast track to Uruguay citizenship, because that just reinforces the fact that there's a lot of bad information out there on the net. Proving again, you have to get your boots on the ground, you have to meet a real trusted Latin American lawyer, because you will need him or an expert facilitator to get your residency and eventual citizenship, if that's what you're looking for. And you should, you know, be voting with your feet sooner or later. After all, that's why you're listening to this show, The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. It's certainly not for the jokes, right? So then let's talk about Uruguay. And you're right, things are always changing, but here's how it stands right now. First, a big plus. Married couples are at a great advantage when obtaining residency in Uruguay, because after they get their permanent residency card, they can become naturalized citizens with full passport privileges in as little as 3 years. However, single people who have attained permanent residency must wait at least 5 years to apply for a passport. So Uruguay is the only case I know of anyway where married couples get a 2-year break. Now for the bad news. Uruguay probably has the most strict physical presence test of all Latin American countries. So what's that mean? Well, guess what? When you first apply for residency, you're expected to spend from 6 to 10 months in the country the first year. You cannot go out, or they'll void your residency application. And the same is true for the following 5 years on your way to getting citizenship. That's for a single, and 3 years for a married couple. So the question is, are you willing to do that? Do you have the flexibility to do that, or the dough? Now, I mentioned dough because Uruguay is one of the most expensive countries in Latin America. In many cases, first world expensive. So in regards to the fact that you have to stay in the country more than a half a year just to keep that residency going, that means any business or leisure trips outside the country have to be jammed into a couple of months. Uruguay immigration expects you to be physically present in the country for at least 6 months a year until you apply for a passport or naturalization. Then, of course, you've got all the rights and privileges of any natural-born Uruguayan. But until then, you're stuck in a pretty expensive country. So the point is, applying for Uruguay residency and then citizenship requires that you show proof to the immigration officials that you're not just popping in and out of Uruguay when you feel like it, but that it's the center of your life. And you're gonna have to document that. In fact, there have been cases where Uruguay judges and immigration officials have requested library cards, receipts from doctor's appointments, proof of country club memberships, church memberships, etc., providing necessary backup material and proof that you intend to live in the country on a permanent basis and have the connections to prove it. So then, unlike a lot of other Latin American countries, like, for example, Guatemala, where you only have to spend 1 day a year in the country to maintain your temporary or permanent residency, which in 5 years or so will lead to a passport and naturalization, forget about doing that in Uruguay. You're not going to be able to fly in for a couple days, meet your lawyer, fill out some paperwork, fly out again, then come back in some months to get your residency card. That's not going to happen. You're going to have to pack your bags, go down there, and live for at least 6 months every year. And think about this for a minute. Uruguayan lawyers will tell you if you're Chinese or Arabic, forget about it. You might be able to get temporary residency, but you'll never become a citizen. However, a lot of people say that's a good thing, especially with what's going down in Europe right now. In fact, last time I visited Uruguay, I saw no Asians and no Middle Easterners. Sure, there were a few Chinese restaurants, but when you walked in, you didn't see any Asians. They were run by Latins. So naturally, the Chinese food there, pretty bad. So you have to really keep up with immigration policies in whatever Latin American country you're planning on becoming a resident. Because you see, many first world people have been delayed in their citizenship process even after investing a lot of time, money, and energy. Which is why even if you're 100% fluent in Spanish, it's almost impossible to do it on your own. You'll need your lawyer to walk you through it. Because he'll know if there has been any recent changes in the procedure. And you know what? Sometimes that's not always true either. Sometimes your lawyer will find out there's a new glitch in the system as he's processing someone's paperwork. Hopefully it isn't yours, but from then on, he'll know. The problem is, in Latin America, government lardheads will change policy willy-nilly, and even your lawyer will only find out through the grapevine, meaning no wide dissemination of that information except within the immigration department. So you go into a government office to do a routine paperwork step, and you find out some other weird-ass measure has been added. Bottom line, it's getting harder and harder to expatriate all the time. Governments, especially in this case Uruguay's government, want to see that you're going to make a permanent commitment to the country, and they'll even check up on you. Now, of course, your Latin lawyer and the people in his office will be able to grease the skids for you. For instance, in order to finally get your citizenship after temporary and permanent residency, you're often required to buy real estate in Uruguay, and you can't sell the property after you've received citizenship. Don't ask me how they check up on that, but apparently it's been done. And for now, anyway, your lawyer can juggle things around to make that happen. Or make it appear to happen. Which again is why there are many Latin countries where it's so much easier to get your temporary and permanent residency. And why you really should get started right away. You can see, as new reports and stories keep coming in, things are getting tighter and tighter. However, there is some good news. Latin lawyers have been telling me, once you've got your permanent residency, I'm referring to permanent residency in pretty much any Latin country, you'll be operating under the rules that were in effect on the date you received your permanent residency. In other words, you'll be grandfathered in if they make any future changes. And those changes, by the way, are almost always due to pressure from Uncle Sam and the U.S. government. But you knew that already, right? So, do get that Plan B of yours in order right away and start that residency process. You want to get in now under the rules as they are. And not get shafted along the way as you wait out that time period, which is usually 5 years, leading to your passport and citizenship. Okay, now let's talk about that 5 years you have to wait as a permanent resident before you get your passport. Now, it goes without saying you should be leading a nice, calm, peaceful life in your new Latin country of choice. Because, you know, after you've waited out that 5 year period, you'll have to get another police report. No, not from the U.S. or whatever first world country you're coming from, but from your new Latin country where you have your permanent residency. Because your new Latin country's immigration officials will assume you've been living there and thus have been a model citizen. Or not. And that will show up on a police report. Maybe. Actually, not likely. So if you've been a bad boy or girl and, let's say, have a police record that says you've been cited for trafficking in human organs or storing nuclear waste in your garage or perhaps you were performing brain surgery without a license. Hey, who knows? We all have our quirks, right? Well, then your application for passport and citizenship just might be rejected. Or not, because, you know, this is Latin America, the land of mordida, meaning bribes, and lawyers who can make things disappear on occasion. Hey, I'm not advocating anything illegal here. I'm just telling you what it's like to live here in Latin America. I mean, hell, that's the name of the show, right? Now, some letter of the law, paranoid gringos with permanent residency have asked me, what happens if I'm driving home from a party and just a little bit tipsy and I get pulled over and get hit with a drunk driving charge? Will that put the kibosh on me eventually getting my citizenship and passport? Well, the answer to that, at least for now, is no. The system is extremely lenient. In fact, only if you get in a car accident and actually kill somebody. Then you'd be in the soup, at least for a while. And even at that, it would depend on the class and type of person you killed. Hey, wait a minute. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? It's a classist society and we don't make the rules. That's why down here, when a middle or lower class guy steals a six-pack of beer, he ends up in jail for 6 months. Meanwhile, a politician down here steals $6 million and he's sentenced to 6 months beach house arrest. Think I invented a new term there, beach house arrest. Gotta remember that. But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh, yeah, the question was, if you get a drunken driving charge, will that defile your local in-country police report and therefore screw up your chances at citizenship and a passport? Now, Latin lawyers will tell you, and they drink pretty good themselves. Since driver's licenses are not on the point system down here, a DUI doesn't show up on your driving record. In fact, nothing shows up on your driving record because you really don't have one. It's your car that has a driving record, not you. Meaning, if you get a measly parking ticket or a moving violation, it doesn't matter. It's your car that gets the ticket. I know that sounds weird and it's hard to explain, but it's true. You see, the whole purpose of a driver's license down here in Latin America is for the government to collect some money from you. I mean, let's face it, you don't even have to take an on-the-road test to get a license. And people drive like absolute mental midget pinheads. And the cops, you know, with their 8th grade education, now that could only mean two things. High standards and professionalism at its finest. So note down here, driving offenses, even moving violations, do not count against you at all. They're just fines, a way for the government to collect money, no reflection on you. Oh, and by the way, back to that residency thing. Regarding that, people have asked me, Johnny, if I have temporary residency and I'm biding my time, do I need a police report to move on to permanent residency? Well, yes, it's pretty much the same thing. You'll get a police report in your chosen Latin country. So you won't have to deal with the cops or the sheriffs up in the States. By the way, you won't have to fight your way through government lines to get that piece of paper. Your lawyer's office will get it for you. So in the end, it's always better to skip temporary residency if you can and go straight to permanent residency. Meaning, you'll have to make some kind of physical investment in the country, real estate, a business, or even a bank CD will qualify. By the way, anywhere from 30 to 50 grand in a 5-year CD at a local bank will suffice for the income requirement in most Latin countries. And of course, besides marrying a local, the easiest way to get permanent residency is to prove that you have a monthly income from an outside source of at least $1,000 a month. Of course, that varies a little bit from Latin country to Latin country, but that's the average. And that could be from Social Security, a pension, an annuity, rental income from properties outside that Latin country, a lot of different things. Again, your Latin lawyer will be able to advise you on all that stuff. But back to Uruguay. So what do you need if you're applying for Uruguay residency, whether temporary or permanent? Well, as of now, you need a copy of your birth certificate, certified by an Uruguayan consulate up in the States, and there's only a few of them, so you'll have to check that out on the net. If married, you'll need a copy of your marriage certificate, also certified by the Uruguayan consulate. You'll need a criminal record certificate from the FBI, which, believe me, is proving to be a big pain in the ass for people in more ways than one. So you'll have to download forms from the FBI and give them the proper set of fingerprints. And I hear the FBI rejects a lot of fingerprint submissions, so that could take a couple months to get it right. Now, unlike some other Latin countries, Uruguay will not accept a sheriff's report from your local county, which, by the way, is infinitely easier. So with your FBI report in hand, you'll have to have that certified at the Uruguayan consulate in the States, too. Now, here's a weird glitch. You'll have to have a health examination performed in Uruguay. Then you'll get a carnet de salud, which is a health card. By the way, ladies, you'll have to have a pap and a mammogram test. And I know a lot of people don't like those mammogram tests. Some studies, in fact, say they cause cancer, but we won't get into that right now. But you'll have to break down and get one if you're going to apply for residency in Uruguay. Then you'll have to open a bank account in Uruguay. And get this, the requirements for that include 2 reference letters from 2 different financial institutions, either inside Uruguay or foreign-based, which means you're going to need your lawyer to help you with that stuff. And by the way, if you offer bank references from first-world institutions, you could say bye-bye to your privacy and anonymity, which is one of the many reasons expats are voting with their feet to get the hell out of the U.S. So if one of your reasons for leaving is getting out from under the thumb of Uncle Sam, why jump back on the radar again? However, Latin lawyers can get around a lot of that stuff legally. Of course, at my upcoming July Latin Insider event, taking place in and around Guatemala, our seminar lawyer will be giving a presentation on all this stuff. Anyway, so what else do you need when applying for Uruguayan residency? You'll need a statement of monthly income, which is a statement of passive income or salary. Now, the requirement used to be just $500 a month, but now it's grown, and there's no real hard and fast rule. Everyone's judged differently. Again, your lawyer will work that out with you. But as a guideline, you should be thinking for a married couple, $1,500 a month. And the document you should present will show the origin of the funds, whether passive incomes, dividends, businesses owned, paychecks, pensions. But you will need to have this stuff. And it'll have to be notarized by your state's State Department and then an Uruguayan embassy near you. And then after you've supplied all these documents, you'll be given an appointment to come back at a later date, around 6 months later, to file some remaining documents, such as proof that you've been in the country during that six-month time. Proof of domicile, they call it. That would be a rental contract, an electric and water bills, etc. So, as you can see, the Uruguay residency process leading to passport and citizenship is a big pain in the ass. Unless you pretty much plan on living there permanently. And as you probably know, it is a tiny little country with a very small population. In my opinion, there's not a lot for gringos to do, except in the high season if you're a sun and fun beach person. They have all four seasons down there. It's pretty far south. And there is a very active sun and fun and beach life, but only a couple of months a year. That's when the tourists start piling in from Argentina and Brazil. But the rest of the time, it's, well, for me anyway, kind of boring. So keep that in mind, because you'll be stuck there at least 6 months a year, waiting that 5 years to get your passport and citizenship. Then there's no restrictions or time limits on being in the country. Oh, and by the way, you probably know by now, just like Colorado, marijuana is legal in Uruguay. So for some of you listeners out there, maybe it won't be so boring after all. That said, let me repeat, almost no one gets residency and passport unless they own a house or a business. That seems to be pretty much a hard and fast rule unless you're married to a local. Okay, changing gears a little. Regarding gringos getting bored and needing things to do to get stimulated, I've mentioned in the past how famous music groups and not so famous has-beens now do make their way through Central and South America. It seems that many dinosaur has-beens of rock have found, by hook and crook, after a long period of decline up in the States, they can get a leg up again, a second wind down here in Latin America, at least the ones who are still marginally alive. However, this time without the David Lee Roth stage antics and acrobatics. So, thanks to a 20, 30, even 40-year lag time effect, many have discovered they have a huge gringo wannabe fan base here in Latin America that they never even dreamed of. It's true, a few years ago they were nothing but old geezer has-been lounge lizards playing the Cleveland Airport Holiday Inn. Or worse, now suddenly they're back on the big tour circuit again, this time in Latin America. Thankfully, no longer in tight satin hip huggers, but gentle, flowing, paunch-hiding corsets and robes. So then, for all us gringos and expats who are into nostalgia, because some of these groups actually were very good, well then, how do you find out about these guys when they're coming through? Yes, gringos will be gringos, and we occasionally crave our live first-world entertainment. Yes, even if those guys and gals we see on stage are mostly wigs, Botox, hyaluronic acid, implants, and titanium. Hey, I'm a sucker for good classic rock and roll myself. I love songs that have a beginning, middle, and end and actually tell a story. And you know, I miss real musical construction like that so much that I feel sorry for everyone under 30. Just look at the crappy soundtrack they had to their lives compared to the soundtrack their parents grew up listening to. So, believe it or not, down here in Latin America, the gringo wannabes have it right, musically anyway. Now, of course, there are the sappy, crappy bands like Lionel Richie, Michael Bolton, and Kenny G, too, along with some of the real greats. So again, the question is, how do you find out when these first world bands and theatrical presentations are coming through? Now, the first maybe 5 or 10 years I was down here in Latin America, when the first of these old nostalgic rockers were coming through, like Jethro Tull, the Moody Blues, or even Yes, most gringos who would really appreciate that kind of stuff didn't even know about it till a couple of days after the show was over. Remember, there was no internet back then, and most gringos had very crappy Spanish, so they didn't read the papers. But that was 10 or 15 years ago. Now, hooray, hooray, lag time has kicked in, and Latins have their own version of Ticketron. It's been around 3 or 4 years now, and it's called Todo Ticket. That's T-O-D-O Ticket.com. They've got agencies and outlets in many Latin countries now. So you can go right online and see the theaters and auditorium seating arrangements. But best of all, you get to see who's coming, sometimes months in advance, so you can plan. For example, if someone's coming through town that you really like, let's say Jeff Beck. Yes, he's come through all right. And you want seats right in front, possibly in the first 10 rows, seats like you'd never be able to get up in the States at a concert like that. Well, down here, you can get fantastic seats with regularity. Why? Because Latins are on mañana time and they'll wait till the last minute to buy theirs. Do keep that in mind. So then let's look up todoticket.com, that's todoticket.com right now. How about for Nicaragua or El Salvador? Okay, so I'm on their site and I see a lot of events. Most of them Spanish singers and crooners and bands that you and I could give a mierda about. And then there's a few talentless Latin DJs coming to town. And some vomitous international white boy DJs too, coming from Europe. Here's one, he's called D-A-N-N-I-C. Danik, white boy Scandinavian, says here he's rated number 25 top vomitous DJ in the world. Since when do you pay 25 or even 50 bucks to see someone who can't sing or even play an instrument? Oh well, but I digress. Anyway, mixed in with all that talentless flatulence on TodoTicket.com, there are some recognizable acts and theater presentations. Here we've got the Vagina Monologues, in Spanish of course. Talk about serious lag time. Come on, when was the Vagina Monologues all the rage up in the States? 30 years ago now, maybe? Well, it's been rocking and rolling through Latin America in the past probably 3 or 4 years to great acclaim. And why not? Half the world has them and the other half are pretty much obsessed by them. Let's see what else we have in the way of first world events and concerts coming on through. Let's see, we have the Broadway musical Godspell, in Spanish, of course. Now, that goes back to the 60s, right? Though I believe a few years back there was a revival on Broadway, but we're talking about heavy lag time there, too. Though can't you see the pattern here? A successful run in the States, it dies a slow death. Someone picks it up, converts it into Spanish, and a whole new lease on life. Oh, and then we have the Moscow Ballet coming through. Hope they pass around the razors this time. Then we have the big Spanish production of Hamlet. Yeah, I'm sure Willie Shakespeare's English translates really well into Spanish. Oh, here we go. It looks like Rock and Roll Hall of Famers' Heart are coming down. Yes, it looks like the American diet has done a number on those chicks. Maybe they ought to change Barracuda to Barrabuda. Ooh. Oh, and how about this? Last but not least, those sappy, long-in-the-tooth, ancient senior prom saccharin kings, Air Supply. Come to think of it, I'd almost rather take a fatal dose of Kenny Rogers or Leo Sayer over Air Supply. Now they're playing big rooms, and for big money, too. The VIP seats are going for, get this, $100 apiece. Now, understand it's not going to be intelligent gringos who are going to pay $100 to see those washouts. It'll be the gringo wannabes who are out in force. Oh, and by the way, here's a related story for you. About 5 or 6 years ago, I got a phone call from a Latin concert promoter. He told me that the band America was coming through and some of their band equipment had got stolen on the road. They were in a pinch and they wanted to rent some vintage equipment and they knew I had some. And he asked me specifically if he could rent my Fender Super Reverb amplifier. As it turns out, that's exactly what one of the guys in America used for his stage equipment. Now in Latin America, there's no vintage musical instrument market like there is up in the States, so there was no way this guy was going to go to a music store and rent one or buy one. I said, okay, two nights, $100 a night, plus two seats in the orchestra for one of the concerts. Okay, like I said, that was 5 or 6 years ago. Now, flashback to around 3 years ago. Same Latin concert promoter calls me up. He said, Johnny, you still got that 1965 Fender Super Reverb? I said, yeah, and he said, well, I'd like to rent it again. I said, why? You have America on tour again? No, Air Supply. And I said, how many nights? He said, two nights. I said, okay, $200 a night. Then he said, but Johnny, last time you rented it out for $100 a night. I said, yeah, but I kind of like America and I absolutely can't stomach Air Supply. Then he said, $100 a night and I'll throw in two orchestra seats. Then I said, you know, if I actually have to go there and watch them, that'll really piss me off. Then I'll have to charge you $300 a night. So then, did we do the deal? Well, that's a story for another time. Oh, and while I'm on the subject of TodoTicket.com, one of the posted events features a classical quartet from Argentina. And when you hear what their repertoire is, you'll see just how much Latins are obsessed with everything first world, European, and gringo. Now, listen to this. It says, the quartet will interpret, this is the repertory now, the Beatles' Rubber Soul featuring Eleanor Rigby, Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody, and I Don't Wanna Miss a Thing by Aerosmith. And finally, Nothing Else Matters by, get this, Metallica. We're talking about a classical string quartet. Two violins, viola, and cello. Now you might say, what the f*** is going on? Who's even going to pay to go to a concert like that? Well, I'll tell you. It's that 2-5% of wealthy and upscale Latins who send their kids to helicopter schools, where a third to a half of the teachers and professors are gringos from the States, who still put an emphasis on culture and the classics. Well, kinda, though you could argue that Aerosmith and Metallica fall way outside that paradigm. In this case, the culture and the classics have to do with the fact that we're talking about orchestral string instruments. So what's not to like about that? They're good enough musically and have a good enough marketing machine to be able to tour in big venues through Latin America, so maybe it's worth checking out. But do check your smartphone at the door. Oh, and I did mention a number of times that upscale Latins are nuts about the Beatles. You might remember the example of Guatemala City, a town of 2 million people, way off the gringo tourist trail, and they've got no less than 9 Beatles cover bands. And musically, most of them are excellent. However, I can almost picture John Lennon walking in, hearing Strawberry Fields with a Spanish accent and punching the guy in the face. That said, all you self-professed rock and roll trivia experts, have I got some trivia for you. And I'll tell you, if you get this one right, you deserve your own rock and roll reality show. Now, let me set this up. You all know that Lennon and McCartney were the best songwriting team that ever came out of the rock and roll era. And they recorded about one album a year, each one with around 12 songs on it. And they'd give one to Ringo, and Harrison had a song that left 10. So Lennon and McCartney could only put 10 songs a year on their albums. However, they wrote songs like Maniacs, sometimes over 50 songs a year. As a result, they gave a lot of those songs away. For example, to Billy J. Kramer, Mary Hopkins, Cecilia Black, Peter and Gordon, Jerry and the Pacemakers, and Badfinger. Now get this, they loved Motown and R&B, and they tried to give away some of their songs to Motown folks, but guess what? They were considered too white bread and often rejected. Okay, here's the question. McCartney wrote a song for Aretha Franklin. She recorded it and didn't like it much. Guess what that song was? Time's up. Would you believe Let It Be? So the Queen of Soul rejected it. Instead, the Beatles did it and made it one of the 10 top-selling records of all time. Oops, getting to the end now. Don't forget I've got my July 2016 Latin American Insider Seminar coming up. It's a great way to get a real head start on your Plan B. Do go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's 2016 seminar link. And do check out John Galt's pre- and post-seminar trips, too. They are optional, but you won't want to miss them. Oh, and do check out my Expat Files YouTube channel. Do subscribe. It's free.
South of the border. Down
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.